Kia ora, ni hao and hello. Welcome to the Cherry Journal podcast. I'm your host, Camille Yang. My guest today is Dylan O'Sullivan. Dylan and I are colleagues at O'Shaughnessy Venture. He is also a guest lecturer at Rite of Passage, columnist at a few major media outlets, and the creator behind the writing-focused brand, Essayful. In today's episode, Dylan and I talk about our experience majored in English literature, online writing, a few our favorite writers including Ernest Hemingway, and Dylan's current writing project, Essayful. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. Since we just finished our OSV monthly meeting, so shall we start with how did you join the OSV and how we become a colleagues?
Yeah, so it's a weird circuitous route that we'll probably come back to it in the story as well. So basically, so I'm from Ireland, rural Ireland, so in the middle of nowhere where it's kind of just fields and Guinness, etc. So my kind of contact to the world of creative people in general was kind of limited to Twitter and things like that. So one day I just saw a tweet from a person called Dave Perrell. He's kind of a big writing guy. I think that's literally in his Twitter bio. It says the writing guy. I think that's his nickname. And it was like some 15 fellowships to a cohort he runs called Rite of Passage. And they were being funded by this guy called Jim O'Shaughnessy, who I'd never heard of. So basically I kind of applied to that. It was meant to the results were meant to come back on a Friday. I didn't hear anything, so I kind of just, I kind of forgot about it. I didn't expect to get it anyway. And then on a Saturday, it came through, said, okay, so you've been selected. So I think it's normally quite expensive, like well outside my, I didn't have any money. So all things were outside my financial range at that point. So then it was like a month and a half kind of intense writing, sponsored by Jim. So then that was kind of rounding up, and I'd just come out of doing a master's in new media. So I emailed from my supervisor that I was kind of had yet to reply. He was trying to get me to go down the PhD route. But then this kind of gave me a taste for writing online, and I kind of saw, okay, there's like a kind of saw the edge of a different world at that moment. So I was like, okay, I kind of want to explore that. So I just sent Jim an email at the end of the cohort, and I said, you know, is ever an opportunity that I can kind of help you out with anything or come on board in any way, I'd love to do so. And then little did I know, he said, actually, as a matter of fact, I'm starting a company in like 2 months. You probably already knew about it at that stage. It was like November time, something like that. So then I was kind of just waiting around for a couple of months, not sure what to expect. And then from January onwards, so I think what we're 7 months in now, 6 months in.
Yeah.
So then that's how, I can't remember when we first met. I assume it was one probably in those introductory calls for OSV.
Yeah, probably. I think that's the first time when I was in China. I got a shitty Wi-Fi there. And I think from your side also.
Yeah, my side. I was staying with a friend in Las Palmas in Spain. But we were both doing calls all the time. So it was his kind of apartment. So I had to do my calls. Like, I had to be creative about where I could do calls. I was like on the beach and kind of just running around trying to find quiet spots around the place. So that's kind of my weird, random, kind of serendipitous path to OSV.
I see. That's good. Yeah, I also joined the Rite of Passage and also got the scholarship. Two cohorts before you.
And what was it, a gym scholarship as well?
No, it's like 2 years ago. Yeah, David, he did the scholarship, probably 10 people. So I applied, then I got in. So it's a very interesting timing. And it also started my way of writing in English. Because before, I always write in Chinese. It's in my comfort zone, writing in my native language. But after I joined Rite of Passage, I start to write more in English. Yeah. So I wonder, how did your love affair with reading and writing begin? Do you remember your very first writing experience?
Very first writing experience. I don't think I do. I had a very weird childhood. So my mother she's like the best person ever, but she's also a bit Stalin-esque, quite authoritarian. She's like a dictator hippie type person. So I was homeschooled until the age of 11. So we were, me and my sister, at home all the time. TV was like, 25 minutes a day and then you were done. Wow. Like code on the TV. So it was just kind of boring. So then books were like allowed to read as much as we want. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of it, kind of begrudgingly, that's kind of what got me into it. And then it kind of became a habit without me even noticing it. It was kind of my normal. It's like, you know, a fish doesn't know it's wet. I was like, it was just everywhere around me. She used to do weird things as well. Like, she's super creative. So, for example, if we didn't want to do the dishes, she would say, okay, you don't have to do the dishes if you practice piano for 20 minutes. And I was like, okay, okay. So then it's like, I didn't want to do piano either, but I was like, okay, it's the best of a bad option. So then she used to do things like, okay, write like a poem or write like a story or draw something, and then you don't have to do this chore and things like that. Or you get like an extra 20 minutes of TV tomorrow. So it was kind of this kind of point system. So I think that's kind of when it developed. And then reading came along way before writing. I didn't really write anything outside of what I had to, like in school. Probably until I was like, maybe like 19, maybe. So I was a late bloomer. I wasn't like sitting at home filling up notebooks like a lot of people were.
But you choose English literature as your major in university, right? Like, why you make this decision? Free time reading.
Yeah, because I love books, not writing them per se, but reading them. So I kind of thought, okay. And then I wanted to go to college, just because it opens so many doors. It kind of doesn't matter what you do. So then I thought, okay, I'm already reading all the time. So what can I do in college that like won't affect my life in any way or add any extra work to my day to day? So then I went up and I did English Lit in Trinity College Dublin, which kind of left me a bit scarred in academia in general. Kind of like, you know, probably high expectations in my mind. And when I arrived, it didn't exactly meet up. So my vagrancy got pretty bad pretty quick. Also, I don't know, it's like kind of lived a dual life. Like, sport has always been my main thing, and kind of going out and like quite a social person, which isn't like necessarily the stereotype for kind of a writer who kind of spend lots of time alone and things like that. So I didn't really like the people. They were nice, but like I didn't vibe at all with the people in my university course as well. So all my friends were doing like business and doing like law and other things. So it was like a convergence of different incentives that kind of led me just to not go pretty soon. So how it used to work, it used to be like a two semesters of 12 weeks used to be how it was worked out. So then on week one, they would tell you what all the 12 weeks were. And then at the end, you did an essay. So there's no, there's some written exams, but very few. So I used to go on week one, and then I go, okay, which thing am I going to do my essay on in week 12? So then I go, okay, week 8 is what I'm going to do. So I would only attend like one or 2 weeks per semester in college generally. But then what I did all the time, I was using the facility. So I was in the library, kind of reading my own stuff, kind of basically doing my own curriculum, and kind of avoiding anything that I was being told to do. So I managed, I got the paper. It's kind of like, you know, quiet quitting.
Okay.
It's like in the workforce, it's like when people just stop going to work and they keep getting paid for what. So I think I kind of quiet graduated. So I kind of just, I snuck through and I got the paper, but like, yeah, I did less than the bare minimum, but somehow I managed to scrape through.
I think pretty similar. Yeah. I also majored in English literature. Because I just enjoy reading. But all the curricular my school designed, I've already read everything when I was young. So they all like repeated stuff. So I start to read other stuff. Like you, I always say, okay, what's this semester I need to do? Then I finish early, then enjoy the rest of time partying in university.
No, yeah, exactly. I also found, well, that's kind of a nice experience. I've actually heard this interesting thing where English literature now is way better in foreign countries than English speaking ones, because places like India, was it in China where you went and did your undergraduate?
Yeah, I did undergraduate in China and in New Zealand as an exchange student. Okay. So I experienced two different English literature courses.
Oh, I'd imagine. Very interesting. Yeah, pretty much, it's hard to imagine two opposite countries than New Zealand and China in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the theory is, and I've kind of heard this, people have kind of like sent me random DMs and stuff on Twitter in the past, that the non-English speaking countries, they've kind of stuck to classics a little bit more because like they assume the students haven't read them, and then they're kind of, isn't that like, you know, a kind of anti-colonial, anti-canon sentiment in those countries because they were so far away. from that kind of unfortunate side of history. But then in places like Ireland and England and America as well, in a big way, there's this kind of sense that, like, you know, the canon is elitist and problematic is a good word that they like to use. So they prefer to go on like niche authors, and it's a lot of kind of sociology, a lot of political stuff. Kind of said, like, I went there and I thought it would be like, you know, 95% Faulkner and 5% Foucault. And then it was the opposite.
Okay.
So I was like, okay. So it was kind of all secondary reading stuff like that. So that's why I really didn't vibe with the curriculum. But then I hear it again, that in a lot of different countries, that's not the case. So you're actually probably, if you want to get an English degree, don't go somewhere where they don't speak English as their main language. It's kind of a bizarre turn of events.
True. Yeah. In China, I started all Shakespeare, even Churchill, mm-hmm. Winston Churchill, those all the classic speeches.
We did zero Shakespeare in 4 years. How's that
okay,
even possible?
Okay. That's so interesting. Because you did one in Paris, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. At Paris, I was in the Sorbonne. That was the best of my 4 years, was English in Paris, which is, kind of, again, doesn't make a whole great deal of sense. But like that university is like, so I don't know how Trinity managed to like get that exchange set up, because that university is like beyond good. So like everyone in there was like, okay, I kind of thought like, okay, I'm, you know, native speaker, I'll kind of flow through this will be easy. And it was like, Jesus Christ, no. It was like their level was like, yeah, incredible. Like probably a lot of like, you know, English mom, French dad type stuff, but like, yeah. Again, that was better than any of my 3 years. I hope my old professors don't listen to this now because they'll be angry. But that was, yeah, the best of the four.
Okay, cool. We all have childhood heroes and idols. So can you share who yours were? Are they majority of writers or not really?
No, zero. So yeah, for me, soccer, I don't even want to bring it up with you because it could derail the whole thing. So
that's all right.
Yeah, diehard Manchester United fan since I was since I was three.
How come? Did you family influence?
It's weird. No, so there's like me. I live in the middle of nowhere. Okay, so it's like 20-minute drive from like even a shop. Okay, and then for some reason, some weird quirk in evolution, that it was three boys. There's only three houses, and there are three boys, and they're all my age, and we're all best friends. The three of us. So we could like see each other's bedrooms from each other's windows, and then there's no one else. So then we all love soccer. So then,
so interesting, you mentioned soccer. I thought you should say football.
So yeah, that's it. Yeah. So we say soccer because in Ireland we have our own football.
Oh yeah, true. Yeah.
Yeah. So we have Gaelic football, which I play growing up, which is horrendous.
Okay.
Well, no, it's fun, but it's, yeah. Irish sports are quite violent. So I kind of, for the sake of my head, I kind of stopped playing those when I was around 20, maybe. I think I was 21, I stopped. So yeah, so it was soccer between us. So then the oldest of us, he's like maybe like 10 months older. He supported Manchester United when he was four that he supported Manchester United. So then I said, okay, but when I was three, I was like, okay, that sounds like a good one. And his dad is Wolves and my dad is Liverpool. So like, I don't know where the seed of that began. So yeah, so heroes were, yeah, Roy Keane, Ryan Giggs, all these, like, you know, Eric Cantona, the classic soccer players. Mm-hmm. I don't think literary heroes came into the picture until I was maybe 15, 16.
Uh-huh.
And even at that, I think went through the classic beat phase. So it was like Jack Kerouac, Allen Ginsberg, people like this. They were the first, I think, maybe the first writers that I thought were cool. I think maybe the comedians then. I'm not sure if that came first. No. Maybe comedians came first, actually. So like people like Bill Hicks and Lenny Bruce, they're these kind of cool comedians from like between the 60s and the 90s. Again, I don't know where that came from either. I've always had like an insatiable kind of appetite for what I wasn't allowed to watch or wasn't allowed to read. So my parents would often hide books that I wasn't, like, I was too young to be reading, or I would always want to watch the thing that I wasn't allowed to watch. I remember like South Park when I remember, it's funny, I was like, I used to watch South Park with my dad until I was like five, and then I wasn't allowed to watch it anymore because I was getting old enough to like understand what was happening. So then all of a sudden I'm like, it's like a reverse. So I think, yeah, those kind of comedians and then those kind of beat poets, and those were, I think, my first kind of heroes that weren't wearing a Manchester United jersey.
That's cool, yeah. Yeah, you know, there was a Chinese player joined Man City. That's how Man City is getting so popular in China market. That's how I start to watch it.
Okay, is that a recent
No, 2002. Sun Jihai. Back then, Man City was so bad. Almost a relegation.
Yeah, we had our fun in the derbies for a long time. But that fun has kind of disappeared recently.
Yeah, after 20 years, finally, it's Man City's time now.
I know. And for the foreseeable future, I'm afraid to say. It's looking good for you.
Not really. Mason Mount just joined. I think, yeah, Man United gonna have some good young players.
Yeah, I think there's a player called Hoyland. He's a striker from Atlanta. He's a Norwegian, I think. He's like the quote-unquote the next Haaland is looking like. So I think we're putting in a bid for him. So I think if we get a striker, strange things
we'll
could
see.
Happen. You never know.
That's good. Okay, back to writing. Cliche question. Who's your favorite writer? It's too many, right?
My favorite, yeah, I think it changes, and then you can have like you've loads of different ones for different reasons.
True.
I've been reading a lot of Hemingway.
Yeah, so on your essay 4, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'm really, really liking the kind of man he was. So he's kind of inspiring in a way that nothing was ever for money. He was like openly competitive with writers, like, and like, you know, call them out publicly.
Yeah.
So I love that kind of like back and forth. It's almost like boxing type thing, which I really like. Openly very, very hostile to critics, which I kind of like that. Like, I think people are kind of scared to say things nowadays. It's always like, no, maybe we'll do a movie together in 10 years. So like it's kind of constant politicking and stuff, but like he didn't compromise ever on that. Didn't like his writing at first because I thought it was boring and basic. A bit boring, basically. But then I really come to know, because like, you kind of realize when you kind of, it's the second and third reading, you realize like there's a lot of stuff going on under the scenes, like a lot of theories going on about kind of, he saw something as like, so some kind of combination of poetry and prose that could like transcend them both. So he was kind of going for this type of like balance between what's said and what's not said and how the reader can kind of fill in these gaps. I think it's really interesting. But I don't think he's a good storyteller per se. So that's why I think his short stories are really good, because it's kind of like, it's nice and concise. But in his novels, I don't think he struggled to like really keep people hooked for a long series. So I don't think on that point, he'd be a bit disqualifying for like someone I just love to read because I love to read them. I think generally nonfiction would be my genre of choice, but kind of nonfiction by people who like really, really wrote. As opposed to like, you know, it's not like a science book. So people like Arthur Koestler, he wrote a lot. People like Camus, I love that. People like Aldous Huxley, so the Brave New World. He did loads of cool nonfiction. You've probably read the Doors of Perception.
Yeah.
So that kind of like very experimental nonfiction, I think is definitely, if I was on like, you know, if I wasn't reading towards a purpose, which unfortunately I generally am, because I have so much reading for things that I want to write about or things that I feel I need to read for a given reason. There isn't much things that I just pick up and just do, you know, just for the joy of that 10 minutes of reading as opposed to nothing. Arthur Koestler, I think, he wrote a really famous book called Darkness at Noon, which is a novel, which I've embarrassingly never read. But he wrote loads of nonfiction. Like The Act of Creation is a book of his, which is like on creativity. And humor and science and how they're all kind of interrelated. So again, it's like covering, bringing in so many cool sources and citations and things like that. So he has loads of obscure, weird books that kind of touch on like, you know, mysticism and psychedelics and science and stuff. Yeah, so it's really, really cool.
Need to add to my reading list.
Yeah, it's definitely start with The Act of Creation is a really cool one to start.
Okay.
I can link you after as well. But yeah, so he'd be up there. I think he's maybe who I've read the most of. I think I've read almost everything at this stage, which is like it could be 20.
Wow.
20 nonfiction. I still haven't read his fiction. Because I don't have a reason to. I'm very like, because you know, you probably experience this as well when you're kind of always trying to put out writing and you kind of have creative projects going on. You're always kind of reading they take up so much of your reading time that you don't kind of have, you're kind of reading straight ahead all the time. You don't have kind of time to read horizontally sometimes, and you do it for the sake of it.
Yeah, escape reading. Yeah.
Yes, yes, exactly. So yeah, no, he definitely, I think he'd be, I'm trying to rack my brains now. Is there anyone else? I loved Ginsberg for a while. Like how that poem, I used to read that all the time. It's kind of weird. Like I love it because I love Kerouac and I love those guys early. And I still think they're kind of, they get a lot of hate because it's kind of seen as like, they didn't really try and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I read them when I was young and I thought they were intoxicating. Again, yeah. I think a book is best, I think, when you only kind of understand like 85 to 90% of what's going on. And there's kind of this weird part, like, oh my God, what's, you kind of don't understand.
True.
Yeah, I'll stick with Costner. I can't think of any, of anyone to knock him.
Yeah, it's right in different stage, you have a different favorite writer, for sure. Yeah. I think Hemingway is the most well-known American writers in China because his book is so easy to translate into other language because the language is so simple and clear. A story is short.
Yeah, I've been doing research for the series I'm doing on him now. It's like, it was like a sensation in places like China and India and Russia. They were like, all this stuff, like it's like, all the kids were like reading like in like 1939 and people didn't understand like what's going on. It was like, they just kind of cut through everything. Yeah, and again, it's because that simplicity, which is kind of, it's a great like starter book for any, for like kids can access it on one level and enjoy it. And then when you're older, you can kind of get a different sense of it, but it's still, you can come back to it. So it kind of transcends all that.
Yeah, I read his book when I was in primary school and I was so motivated by the old man and the sea story. Like, yes, never give up.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you can be motivated for all kinds of reasons because it's like, I think 27,000 words and won the Nobel Prize. So it's like, yeah, so you're not that far away. You're never that far away. Yeah. That's like, what? You could get that done in 2 months, which I think is also, it's an inspiring thought.
But later on, I kind of have this question, why Hemingway choose to commit suicide? Because he's such a strong mind, like a never give up spirit. So what's your opinion on that?
That's a good question. I think he was intensely lonely. I think he went through a few wives.
I thought he never lack of girls around him.
Yeah, always. No, but I think it was like it was constantly transient. So there was no very few lasting relationships, which is why probably developed because, you know, he went to like Italy in the war when he was 18, got blown up, came back. Then he was like, you know, correspondent in Spain for so many years, traveling around. And then obviously all his books in France. Then he came back to America for a while, kind of lived in the limelight, and then immediately kind of, you know, set off to Cuba. And then Spain was there for a while, kind of alone. You know, you're an English speaker. I don't know how much English was spoken in Cuba back then, especially. And then I think he died ultimately in some kind of Midwestern state in the US. So I think he just kind of literally, he gave his all to writing at the expense of absolutely everything else. And then, you know, that kind of run out. He probably got like, you know, he's probably like a 90-year-old in writing years, even though he committed suicide when he was young, because he just put like, again, the hours he used to do per day religiously and things like that. It's like, again, it's a beautiful analogy here for you. It's like Wayne Rooney. Like there's a reason, because he started so hard, so quick. He was 16, England, United, playing every week. So then when he was like 26, 27, he'd already had like the career of a normal 33, 34 year old. So then things just began. I think you only have so much in the tank. And then if that thing that you're pursuing is the only thing that you ever wanted to do and that you dedicated your whole life to, like Hemingway, I think you wake up and you're like, okay, I can't do that anymore. And because I've done that all the time, I can't do anything else.
Yeah.
You're kind of like, you're completely, you're at a loss.
I see. Yeah, that's a very good interpretation. Because for me, I thought he probably can't bear the physical pain. I mean, because he got two airplane crashes and he got injured in the war when he was a war correspondent.
Yeah, that probably played in as well. I think he was like, you know, the consummate macho man. So even if it wasn't the pain, which I'm sure it was that as well, but the idea that he was kind of like, you know, emasculated and he couldn't be the kind of action man that he was used to being, which is something he valued kind of you know, he was like boxing late in life and all this stuff. So kind of, he valued that above right. He was kind of wanted to be seen as like a, there's a quote, I think I referenced it in the last essay. It's like he wasn't born a sportsman who tried to become a writer, but he was born a writer who then desperately tried to become a sportsman. Yeah. So that's all he wanted to be seen as that all the time. So I think, yeah, with the two plane crashes and things like that, I think it could have been, you know, or else he just like, you know, had a bad day. I don't know ultimately, but I think it's probably a convergence of some of those things. You know, they kind of, they stack up in a weird way.
It's a very sad story. Because sometimes I just feel like, okay, even for people like Hemingway, he will commit suicide. Will I be strong enough to hold up my crazy mind? Yeah, I know it's the instant thought, but sometimes I feel like there's too many ideas in my mind. If I don't write them down, I will fail myself. I failed my potential. Do you ever have this thought? You have a purpose.
I'm having it right now.
That's good. Yeah. So what's your writing routine like? I know you are writing essay for at the moment. So can you share your writing process?
Yeah, absolutely. So I kind of, unfortunately, I work very well with deadlines, which is kind of, it's not. So then I know that's basically become a crutch that I rely on. So writing for online publications, for places like The Spectator and Ario and things like that, what I'll often do is I'll pitch and then it'll get accepted it'll get rejected or it'll get accepted. Mm-hmm. Then if it gets accepted, there'll be a timeline. And then once there's a timeline, I'll waste most of that not doing, always reading too much beforehand. So it's kind of a form of procrastination that I can't avoid, because I feel like it would kill me if I read something after that should have been in, contributed before. So like for my master's thesis, it was like 10 months of reading and then like 3 weeks of writing, which is like completely insane and the wrong way to do things. But I was like, no, I have to read absolutely everything before I actually get to writing. And then I handed in my thesis with like 11 minutes left on the 31st of August. So I got very lucky that I just managed to hand it in.
What's the title and the subject of your thesis?
So my bachelor's thesis was on, do you know the Richard Dawkins book called The
Selfish God? Gene?
Yes, The Selfish Gene. Okay. So I was doing literature. So I did a thesis on how, so then this idea of memes as well, that's in it. So I did it on like the hero meme. Okay. So then how like heroism was like, what were like the psychological and kind of an evolutionary basis of that? Like, the classic, like tall, strong, like courageous, this kind of stuff. And then how the meme kind of evolved through Hitler, kind of going through multiple stories and King Arthur, that meme. So like there's kind of a central archetype that like, okay. So there was so many spin-offs even from the very first one. It was called like La Quest. Mm-hmm. It was like this old French book. It was like the very first King Arthur. And then all of a sudden that it just kind of spread out almost like, you know, like genetics. So then they were like having children with each other. So that was what I was doing my BA on. And then my MA was on Amazon's recommendation systems and how that relates to behaviorism and human agency.
It's more like a social science.
Yeah. So my BA was in or my MA was in new media and digital culture. So I veered off kind of into media and tech in my MA from the literature basis. So
okay.
It was all like algorithms, big data, all that kind of thing. Yeah, I've forgotten where we were.
We were talking about your writing process. You are good at deadline. Yeah,
good at deadlines, good at procrastination. So I'm not very good at writing every day. So even though I know that's the way you should do it, I tend to operate. Steinbeck said, he used to go like, I write incredibly for a day and then the next, or it's like I write for a day, then the next I dawdle. So you write loads one day and then, so then you kind of feel good. And then the next day you're like, well, I wrote loads yesterday, so I don't really, you know, it's hard to motivate yourself today. And then the next day you feel guilty about not writing yesterday.
Yeah.
So then there's this kind of like constant up and down peak of, again, guilt. Again, this is a huge sense of shame that, you know, I'm not progressing forward and things like that, or I'm leaving things on the table. You know, I'm 27, tomorrow I'll be 67. Why am I, you know, there's this kind, these kind of ideas floating through. So yeah, not the healthiest relationship with a property, but it's kind of like, yeah, it's like going to the gym. It's like, I know always there's a feeling of needing to do it and a feeling of feeling bad if you don't do it.
True.
And not enjoying it really ever that much in the moment, except when things are going quite well. Again, yeah, well, no one enjoys the first 10 minutes. So like, it's kind of like, if I can hit flow state happens sometimes. That can come from, I've kind of diverted from my computer recently. So I've returned to freehand mostly now, just because I've read there's like a lot of research coming out now that it's an impediment to writer's block. Just kind of getting the hand moving, it can move quicker than your head sometimes, and you kind of you get into a rhythm that is kind of hard for the computer. And it's also easy on paper to incorporate structure, where you can't really structure on a word processing. So you can't move things around kind of like, you know, laterally, or you know, even drawing arrows and stuff like that. It doesn't have that functionality. So when it's on paper, you can start drawing. It's like, actually, no, this is connected to that idea. And you can kind of be messy. And even Camille Paglia said that she can't write unless she's able to like literally strike through. If she sees a bad idea, it's not enough to erase, because then you forget the bad idea that was there. She needs to see the bad ideas that are gone, and things like that. So I've gone back into that only in the last couple of months.
Yeah.
And I find that it makes starting way easier when I can just kind of sit at a table and this is pen and paper. And because you can doodle, you don't need to like, it's not, you're not immediately into like, okay, what's the first word? Is this the right first word? So yeah, so it goes through kind of periods of intense writing. I tend to call myself out on Twitter a lot. So that's kind of giving myself artificial deadlines. So I would say, you know, essay is coming this day, even though I haven't started yet. So then I know, oh, fuck. Yeah, so I have to have it done for that day. So yeah. That's kind of a way of keeping me honest. But no, in general, I'm quite bad.
Mm-hmm.
As in, I have like 3 pitches for articles accepted in like 3 different places that they've been accepted for a while. The problem is that they're not time sensitive. Mm-hmm. So they'll publish them when I give them to them. So then I might need to, you know, artificially kick myself into starting at least one of those as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, are you a regular writer? Is it a daily thing for you, or is it kind of, does it go through kind of peaks?
So my writing process, I like to keep a journal. So yeah, I'll show you.
Oh, I've never kept one in my life. It's something I always like. I bought so many to start doing that. Never did it.
I think I have at least 2 journals per year since I was 6, 7. So yeah, I enjoy writing on freehand. So like what you said, it's a good start. Mm-hmm. You just do some doodling, then later all the ideas just come through. I prefer writing on paper than on computer. But nowadays, we need to type on computer.
Yeah, it has to work because you have to transcribe.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And then and you also don't have access to like notes and other quotes. So you're kind of, I'll often like, there'll be like an X with a quotation mark around it. That's like, okay, I think I know the quote, I want to go there, but I can't remember it word for word, I think.
True. For my Chinese writing, I do weekly newsletter to my readers. So I write about 4,000 words per week. And for English one, I'm still go with flow. I'm waiting for the muse to come to me that I can write. I don't know if I mentioned when I was visiting Blonte's sister's residence, like I feel that I was possessed by them. I start to write nonstop. I quite enjoy that feeling when I write in English. Like you just can't stop, feel like you are not yourself anymore. There's someone or ideas using your body to express themselves.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, like ideally that should be happening every time. I think that's what like a lot of people, I don't know if you saw on SFL the other day, I linked a thing of Bob Dylan saying like, he was kind of like, I don't know who wrote those songs. Mm-hmm. I couldn't do that now.
True.
Again, being kind of possessed. I think that a lot to do with how you structure your writing as well, which is something I did it for a long time accidentally. Now I do it on purpose. Again, so I used to wake up all the time at like 6-7 o'clock. And if I had like a job, or even if I didn't have a job, or if I'd been drinking, I used to make myself get up. And then I just start reading and like taking notes. Again, kind of this like fear of the future. Like, okay, I need to like, you know, just get working. So all the time. But I think when you're in that kind of very tired, but you're awake, and this kind of Arthur Koestler calls it like the marshy shore between your conscious and your subconscious. So you're kind of awake and you're kind of doing things, but you're not in total control. I think the critic in your mind is still asleep. So you're kind of, you get into that flow state really, really quickly. I think there's a tweet by someone called Isabel. She's a pretty big Twitter person. I don't know who she is, but it's she asked her professor why he always got up at 5 o'clock to write in the morning. And he says, the ego is quietest in the morning.
Yeah.
So kind of, but before his ego got up, he would get up just so he could kind of, again, just for that output stage. Because you probably have a problem with it as well, because I think everyone does, where it's like the writing and editing at the same time. So you're kind of being really meticulous about your words as they come out. Whereas like all the greats, they would like just write terrible stuff and not edit themselves at all until they had like, you know, 10 pages of awful writing. And then edit that down to 3 pages of great writing. But I have a perfectionist brain, so I have a trouble of like just turning off. I kind of like, I've had that like, you know, 10 hours of staring at a screen because I can't get this one sentence right type thing. But I'm trying to fight that, and I'm trying to like, you know, so then force myself to wake up early.
Yeah.
Staying up really late is the other way of doing it, because we're kind of drowsy.
Mm-hmm.
I found out that that's a good way of kind of just getting mass onto the page.
You know, some writers have like special trick to help them writing, like Charles Bukowski, he would drink a lot and then start writing. Do you have any unique tricks?
No, so I think the late and the early are my only quirks. I don't think I use any substances to get myself going. I guess sometimes like I try not to vape, but then sometimes if I know I have a vape, that just makes sitting down easier, because it's not just me and the computer. I can always like, you know, take a break in that way. No, I never drink ever alone. So I never have it in the house if I'm by myself. But then, so I'm we call it a social drinker. But then like as soon as there's like something happening at the bar, I'm there. But so I think it's a good way of like kind of making sure you're not an alcoholic. I think alcoholics really starts when you're at home doing it. So I think I have quite an addictive personality. So I think it's probably not the best thing to start doing. So I never drink when I write.
Mm-hmm.
Do you drink when you write, or do you experiment in that way?
No, I need to keep sober. If I drink, I couldn't recognize what I write down. Like, because I keep the journals and I found out some journal entries when I got so drunk, I have no idea what are they. I couldn't recognize my writing, and there's just some weird drawing. So it's not help at all.
No, I don't know. There's probably something, again, to kind of get your inhibitions down to like maybe having a sip of something. I know like there's loads of comedians who like smoke weed and stuff like that, but that doesn't agree with me. I just kind of feel sick and sleepy whenever I smoke weed, so I don't think.
Yeah, weed doesn't work on me either.
No, I'm not built for it. Unless they come out with something interesting, I might try it. But no, as of now, just being slightly sleep deprived is my drug of choice.
Okay. Yeah, for me, I like to visit writers' hometown. I need to put myself into that environment. Then I will be able to write. I don't know how my brain works like that way.
Yeah, I have something similar. I rarely live near where writers are, so like that's I do kind of, I get very, very inspired, like things like when I was in Paris going to like the great, like, you know, there's like that famous, I don't know what it's called, it's like a really famous graveyard where it's like
this
scarf,
and
Jim Morrison, like, you know, they're all buried there. And I think like T.S. Eliot and stuff used to like, you think he worked in the Sorbonne and things like that. So I get inspired that way. I am very like set and setting in my writing. So everything like there needs to be a vibe, like the wrong cafe, or and like I can't get going. I need to choose like the right table outside. I write with music as well, often. But all kind of, I have a playlist actually.
Is that at a desk? Is that the one?
At desk, yeah.
You share it in the Slack. Yeah, oh, I stealed it. It's good.
Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I quite enjoy that.
So yes, that's like 200 songs now. So I'll just stick that on shuffle again. It's just something that slightly lessens the blow of starting. So I know.
Mm.
And again, sometimes I'll feel like it's like a random nice song isn't enough. I'll think, oh no, I need Interstellar now. I need the Interstellar soundtrack to get going, something like that.
That's cool. Yeah, because for me, I like to play only one song repeatedly when I'm writing. Yeah. So I can get into the zone. It helped me to focus.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I think I tried that. I think on YouTube, there's like an Interstellar like on loop for like 60 minutes.
Oh, okay.
I've done that. I tried
it's
the
too
one.
Too intense.
It depends on the one. So some of them are intense. That's true.
Yeah.
But I tried the white noise thing as well, but
I don't like those.
No, I just it made it worse. I was like, maybe actually starting writing worse because it was just kind of annoying.
Yeah. What kind of a genre?
Yeah, classical. I like kind of modern classical, like Max Richter and people like that.
Mm-hmm. Phil Glass.
Phil Glass. I love Phil Glass. Yeah. Again, that kind of genre. The old classical music doesn't quite do it for me. It feels a bit corny.
Okay.
A bit like I just
like
imagine
Mozart,
like,
you know,
a bit like, you know, Robin Hood type thing. I just it doesn't do it for me at all.
Uh-huh.
So that genre really gets me to gear normally.
Yeah. So as a writer, like, are there specific genres you want to explore, like, for your writing?
Fiction's just out of my world, I think. It's just not. It's never going to happen. It's the optionality of it. It's just, you know, there's like a, you know, this could go in 1,000 directions, every single sentence can go in, and then, you know, that compounds. So then there's like three sentences in, you could have gone in 300 different, 1,000 different directions. I was like, no, I can't do that. So what is within my realm is plays, scripts, screenplays. Again, a lot of white space.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to worry about the options too much because you're just kind of like giving the bare bones and letting a lot of that be implicit. So I've been writing a comedy series.
Oh, wow.
I started it and I made good progress about 6 years ago. And then it's been stopped for about 4 years. I plan on reigniting that at some point when I have time. So that's kind of been the only kind of in the fiction genre that I've experimented with. For me, it's pretty much always been nonfiction.
Like essay for you are currently
things like that. Done some culture stuff on like for The Spectator, I wrote about Banshees of Inisherin and some stuff like that. I kind of like it to like analytical kind of writing and then bringing in all kinds of different sources and quotes and stuff. That's going to be a tapestry. That's kind of what I really like to do. I think nonfiction book, kind of said before I'm 30, I want to get one out. I kind of made that vocal to myself. I think it's going to be on the essay.
Nice.
Like on the form, and then like, you know, drawing on the likes, like, you know, Montaigne, who kind of invented it, and going through different people and essay structure and openings and closings, all that kind of stuff. So like a book on writing, focus on the essay. That's kind of in my head right now. That could change. That could change tomorrow. I haven't started it.
Okay.
I can see myself going doing a couple of books in nonfiction over the course of my life, I think.
Nice.
And have you done two fiction books now?
One fiction and another one is more like a collection of my prose, poems, short stories.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did you find it? Was it tough writing the fiction book?
No, not really. Because I got so many ideas. Every minute I have so many going on in my head. So I think there are probably hundreds of ideas waiting for me to write down. I got that Notion page about all the ideas I need to write down about the short stories.
But does it not become difficult, like Sophie's Choice, like choosing between ideas. Is that not the difficult part?
It's too many. That's why I find it's very hard to focus. Which one should I start? If I pick this one, mm-hmm. which means I will sacrifice the rest because I only have a limited time. So sometimes I feel struggle. Then, okay, I'm not deciding. I'm just not writing any ideas. I'll put them there. Because I feel like they're all like my babies. I need to share my mm-hmm. equal love.
Yeah, there's probably a happy medium where you're dumb enough not to have like only like one good idea a month.
True.
But then you're smart enough to actually execute it. So then you're kind of constantly like, you know, I don't know, like a Tarantino. So like you only need one good idea for a movie. Spend 5 years doing that. You release it. It's a classic. Mm-hmm. And then you go like that as opposed to kind of just trying to do like loads of things all the time, which I struggle with that as well.
Yeah, that's not fun. Okay. For example, if I die tomorrow, there's like so many story ideas will buried with me. Sometimes I feel guilt or shame. I need to write down more. Reduce
me
my
as well.
Social life. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, me too. Especially with my parents as well, because they couldn't have set me up better to like pursue some kind of creative life, just to kind of like this was their plan from the beginning. Like if I got like a corporate job, they would literally change their surnames and move country. So I kind of feel like, damn, I have no excuse not to like at least, you know, repay that in some way. So that kind of, which is a good, it's good to have that kind of guilt and shame. I think I heard a good phrase the other day. What was it? He's like, are you driven or dragged? So is it all kind of inspiration that's driving you, or you feel like you're being dragged towards something? It's almost like against your will and you just need to do it. So I think I'm definitely dragged. It doesn't come from like I want to, like, you know, I don't have any aspirations of I want to do this because I'll get this or I'll be that. It's like I have to do that.
Yeah.
So I don't become who I am right now, basically.
Yeah. So many people say it's not you have ideas, ideas have you. So mm-hmm. I feel like I need to fulfill this role, otherwise I will fail.
No, absolutely. Yeah, this thing is something really profound there.
Based on your experience, do you have any advice or tips for mm-hmm. people who wants to be a writer?
I heard something good once that if you want inspiration to go be a writer, especially today, just go into a bookshop and then look at the bestsellers and then open it up and look how terrible it is. And then realize the bar is not high. The bar is so, so, so low. There's so many bad writers out there making a great living who don't commit themselves to the craft. They are like, basically, you know the phrase NPC?
NPC, yeah.
It's like it's an insult on Twitter. You know, in a video game, there's like you're the main character, and then there's these other characters. They're non-player mm-hmm. characters, all right? So there's like the theory is like in mm-hmm. the real world, there's actually NPCs that they're like they have no interior like brain. They're just kind of like, you know, zombies basically walking around. Some of these people are writing books and they're getting published, and they've never had an original idea, and it's just awful. So the bar is so low. And again, even like as we said, you know, Hemingway, 27,000 words. Nobel Prize.
Mm.
Okay, there's like a John Boyne who we kind of had an interaction with on Twitter a while ago. The boy in the striped pajamas. Like he was like he did some edits, but it was like 3 days or something like that. You know, and it kind of came out mm-hmm. of nowhere. So there's like, it's not as if you have to like, it's not like sport where you're kind of only going to make it if you start when you're three. And you're trained all the way up. Like no one, like, you know, randomly mm-hmm. becomes a soccer player at 21, having never trained or been in the system. It's like incredibly rare. But writing, you could do it right now, and it could just happen, and you don't really know why, and you're kind of almost not responsible for it. But all you have to do is kind of sit there and wait, and just not move. Things like Kafka said, just like there's a quote. I don't know the wording, but it's like something like sit in silence, and again, the world will open up before you, or something like that. That's a bastardization of what he actually said. It's like a nice quote, but like all you have to do is sit in silence with a pen and paper and then like bore yourself into doing something and then not let yourself move. And then I think mm-hmm. Hemingway said as well, that's literally it.
Bleeding.
And he says like reason, like everybody could write the books that I write, like what they pay me for is that I can sit at a desk for this amount of time. That's it. That's all. Like there's nothing special other than that. It's just time at desk.
True. Funny enough, you mentioned Kafka. I was in Prague 2 weeks ago or last week. I can't remember. Yeah, when I was there.
Oh, the Kafka Museum.
Yeah, I was there. And I feel like if I were Kafka, I probably could write a castle as well. Because when I was in that setting, I feel like you're going to write it about the castle because you can see it in front of you. Like that idea just waving at mm-hmm. you. You need to write it. I don't know, probably his story already in my mind. So I feel like it's very familiar for me to write the similar story.
That setting with like the black almost buildings plus, you know, Soviet control, like Russia, like it all maps yeah. perfectly into the stories. You can it's almost describing his reality.
True. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like if I were him, I'm going to write it down. Yeah. Just those places, just so inspiring. When you're there, you're going to write it down. Otherwise, you feel, I don't know, that feeling of you got that idea, you need mm-hmm. to express.
Oh, yeah. What do you think about this theory mm-hmm. that I have? I think that there are less good writers in hot countries than cold ones.
Ah, yeah, true.
Like Spain is great. Spain has some good ones, but like not enough for its population.
No.
You know? South America has some like unbelievable ones as well.
Mm,
But not enough for its population. And then you've got like small things like Germany, you think like the philosophers there.
Yeah.
And like Ireland, like not to toot our own horn, but like we were like a tiny country and it's ridiculous like the sheer number that came out. Only because it's cold, raining, yeah. It's cold, you're inside, you can't socialize.
True.
You can't that's probably leveled out now because instead of you just go on the internet now.
Yeah.
But back then you had nothing to do.
Yeah.
Your neighbors were like, you know, 10 miles away in the rain. So all you had to do kind of was write something down. Living in Spain now, I feel it. Like this is kind of every day's a Friday. It's hard to like, you know, sit at your desk and you can hear people drinking at like 1 p.m. in the afternoon. So you're like, it's very easy to get sucked in. And then all of a sudden, like, yeah, you're 70.
Uh-huh. You know? True. Yeah, when I was living in London, right, a lot. And especially during the COVID, I wrote my first English novel because I had nothing mm-hmm. to do.
Yeah, COVID will do it.
Yeah, so I finished that. But since I moved to Lisbon, I find, it's hard to write. Every time I see the sunny day, I'm just like, want to go out. I don't want to write. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, probably I need to move to some rural area. Like Russian also, look at all these masterpieces they got. Yeah. Yeah, it's super, super deep.
Yeah, like Solzhenitsyn in the gulag, writing in his head. You know, this kind of stuff,
So, because I know you move around a lot. Like, how do you pick up your location? Like, what's your criteria?
My criteria is normally Spain. That's, like, my main criteria. I love Spain. So I'm living in the north now in Gijón. Like, I did a year in Valencia.
Oh, okay.
For 8 years, I did, like, a one-month summer in Spain.
Wow.
Working. So, like, there's big camps where it's, like, 50 Spanish students and then 50 Irish students go over to Spain and we teach them English for like for a month. So you live together and stuff like that. So it's crazy. So I worked with that for a long time. And then ever since like Sevilla, Tarragona, Barcelona, Madrid, so it's basically Ireland to Madrid. I kind of pop back and forth, but I think I might explore further afield. Well, in October, I'll go to New York for the first time. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah. I think you're going to love it. Yeah, New York has different vibes.
Yeah, kind of like all the... See, I love comedy. So it's like a big, you know, comedy scene.
Ah,
so I hear about it all the time when I podcast and stuff. So I'm like, oh, God, yeah, that sounds incredible.
Yeah. I've already planned all my jazz club visiting in New York.
Jazz is
very into jazz. So, New York, that's the best place. Yeah. Finally, what's the most rewarding part of being a writer?
There is something, first of all, it's really good for you. It makes your thoughts, there's so many thoughts, half thoughts in your head that aren't actually your thoughts. And then if you were like trying to explain them, you wouldn't actually be able to. So they're kind of, so it kind of solidifies your thinking and it makes you smarter in a really, really good way. There's a quote that like painters like painting and writers like having written. So the process isn't always the funnest, but kind of having something. And then if you can get to this stage where it kind of feels remarkable to be paid directly for the ideas in your head. It's a really weird thing. There's no physical product. So like you can literally, you know, the sense of you like making money or making value just by thinking things up. And then that, like, you know, people can find something in that. Like you're not like, you know, giving them like a phone or like a piece of tech, or it's kind of just something really, really cool about that, I think.
I think it's just helped me to become less crazy. Since I can put my ideas on paper, it feels like they are not annoyed me in my head.
No, yeah, that's really, really true. Yeah, loads of writers, I can't think of the quotes, but I remember hearing some kind of quote like that from loads of different people.
Yeah, I think the reason I moved to Portugal because that Portuguese writer Fernando Pessoa, he said something similar. And every time I read his book of Disquiet, I feel like, oh my God. Did I write about it?
It's been on my list for a long
really?
Time. I never read it. No. I must.
I think people either love it or find it ridiculous.
I think that's always the good books or the great books.
Yeah.
I think good books everyone likes, but then great books, there's something polarizing about them.
Yeah. If you ever come to visit Lisbon, I'll take you to Fernando Pessoa's museum.
Okay, yeah, nice. Yeah, absolutely. I'll try and organize a deadline around that so I get the inspiration.
Nice. Okay, thank you very much for your time, and we'll see you around.
Perfect. Thank you, Camilla.